I did. I did. I do. A 911 fic written by Hatterlove and read by C. Welsh. This fic is rated Teen Enough Audiences, Relationship Evan Book Buckley Eddie Diaz, with additional tags for angst with a happy ending, whoomp, pining, exes to lovers-ish. Author cherry picks canon events because she can. Get in the ambulance, loser, we're going yearning. It's happening in the kitchen again, and it wasn't even on purpose. Takes place at some vague point in Series 5 post-girlfriends. Getting together, theoretically, and alternate universe canon divergence. Summary. I didn't know what it meant when you kissed me up against that counter, Book wants to say. He wants to name every place that's hurt to see for the past 3 years. Wants to remind Eddie of the way they used to be in bed together. Quiet and all-consuming. The way their hands would curl together on Eddie's stomach in their sleep. Wants to ask why Anna isn't there anymore. Why Eddie doesn't tell him to get out when Book's spending the 7th consecutive night on his couch. Book wants... and wants and wants. Isn't that the story of his life? Or, the one in which, a couple of weeks after meeting each other, Book and Eddie fell in love, broke up, and then forgot to fall out of it. Author notes. Last one of the prompt fills, and then I am going back underground, and we'll see you for the long fic, hopefully sometime in December. This one combines an accidental kiss between exes and tending to your lover's wound, placing a kiss on top of their head, grateful they're still alive. We're bringing in a little bit of angst because I had nine shots of vodka last night, and I have never not been a maudlin bitch the day after I drink. Title is from The Pillowcase by Annalise Gelman. It's not actually that bad. It's not that bad, Book tells Hen, raising his head off the gurney. He is a little woozy from whatever's dripping into his veins, but he thinks he manages a half-convincing smile. See? I'm good. I swear to God, Hen says, apparently focused on the massive gash running down the side of Book's arm. But he's almost sure she's also smiling just a little. Can you just lie down and be still? You keep jittering like this, I won't be able to get all the debris out, and then it'll be bad. Book replies, dropping his head back down, watching the streetlights paint on the ceiling of the ambulance. They don't have the sirens on. No sirens is good. He must be fine, right? But then I wouldn't see your beautiful face, Henrietta.
There we go,
Chim says from the front, just as they turn and Book has pulled sideways.
Drugs kicking in, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about, Book says, and his tongue is kind of funny, slippery, in his mouth. I always want to see Hen's beautiful face. And yours, Chim. You're very aesthetically pleasing. Hen chokes on a laugh. Damn, no love for me, comes Eddie's voice, and Book blinks. Because Eddie? Is he hallucinating? Is Eddie in the ambulance? Hen and Chim are already here, so he would have had to ask Bobby for permission, and he's just... riding along? What is he doing? Eddie? Book tries to say, except it comes out all mumbled, and it's weirdly hard to talk. Stop trying to move, Hen says. I mean it. A sigh. Give him here, Eddie says. And then there's a clatter and a commotion, and Book can't see any of it because his head is too heavy to lift off the gurney. And it's not fair, because if Eddie's in the ambulance, Book wants to be looking at him. Hen's hand on his arm lets go, only to be replaced with another, more familiar touch. You here? Book asks, and Eddie chuckles in the back of his throat. I'm here, he says. So Book fights and fights and fights until his head listens and flops over to the left. His cheek sticks weirdly to the plastic of the gurney, but it doesn't matter because Eddie. Eddie's there. His face is sooty and he has helmet hair, the front of it flopping down into his face all wispy and gorgeous. It probably smells like the apple shampoo Eddie has used for as long as Buck has known him, and there's something in the back of his head telling him it'd be a bad idea to reach out and touch it, but Eddie's helmet hair. So Buck tries, instinctively, reaching up with the arm closest to Eddie to get at it. Which is the arm with the gash. Huh. Buck. Eddie closes his eyes, exasperated. Adorable. Buck should let him know how adorable he is. Hen said to stop moving, remember? And he wraps a hand around Buck's wrist, firm fingers that stir a memory somewhere very, very deep down. He pulls Buck's arm down to where it was, picking up the tweezers Hen had left and going back to picking stuff out of the wound. How did he even get it? Buck can't remember and he tries to ask, but what comes out is more of a, huh? Eddie pauses and looks over at him. The glare of a streetlight passes quickly over his face, and he really has the most beautiful eyes Buck has ever seen, which seems important. Is definitely important. Eddie needs to know so he can keep them safe. Eyes, Buck manages to say, lifting his other arm so he can point to Eddie and make sure he knows. But he can't really feel anything below his shoulder, much less control it. Eyes, Eddie nods seriously. Maybe he gets it. He always is so good at getting what Buck means, even when the words don't work right. You have those. They feel all right? Buck frowns and purses his lips and doesn't know sentences. Don't worry, says Eddie, and he picks out the last whatever that is in Buck's arm. It looks gross, jeez. Then wraps some gauze over the wound. It's just a bit of morphine so you're less annoyed about being at the hospital. Don't need the hospital, Buck thinks. Yes, you need the hospital, Eddie replies out loud. Is he reading Buck's thoughts? If he's reading Buck's thoughts, Buck is in trouble. It shouldn't be too bad. Just some stitches and a tetanus shot. You? Buck asks and thinks, are you okay? Are you coming? What are you doing here? So maybe Eddie can read those questions in his mind. Talking is hard. Bobby's letting me stay, Eddie says, around the cleaning wipe he's opening. He has teeth. Something about his teeth. You won't be alone. Huh, that feels good. Warm. Maybe Buck was trying to ask that and he didn't even realise. One more minute, Chim says from the front. Eddie unfolds the wipe and reaches towards Buck's face. And Buck suddenly remembers how he ended up here. A fire in a garage, the metal roof of it warping and groaning above them. Then breaking, falling, Buck's foot stuck behind a tool bench that was still standing. And Eddie. Eddie who lunged for him and pushed him down, the metal just grazing Buck's arm where his chest had been a few seconds ago. You, he says again, and thinks it, but it's not enough this time that Eddie read his mind. He has to know. Saved me. Gently. So gently, Buck thinks he might be crying about it already, because his face is wet. Eddie raises a hand, takes Buck's chin between his fingers, and turns his head to the side. Then he dabs at Buck's cheek with the wipe he just opened, and it stings, so Buck's probably about to walk around with scabs on his face again. But that's less important, because Eddie's holding him by the chin, firm enough to have Buck wherever he wants him. And there it is again, one of those memories that are always wiggling free, that Buck is always pushing down. A touch that has happened before, just differently. You gave me a real scare, you know that? Eddie says, and his voice is low. Low and warm, and Buck wants to pull him down and in and find out exactly how that spot between his jaw and his ear tastes, but his stupid arms won't work. He wants to crack a joke, to say that he's still here, isn't he? And that feels weirdly familiar. Looking at Eddie and thinking, I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. I've been here. Look at me.
We're here,
Chim announces, and both of the front doors slam. There, Eddie smiles, the one that stretches all the way to the corners of his eyes and makes them crinkle. Now you can look all pretty for the nurse, other than the hole in your arm. Buck looks at his smile and can't stop the feeling that something is wrong. It feels like Eddie should be holding him, like he should be close, but he isn't. And Eddie's bottom lashes look wet, like he's been. And then Buck's thinking nothing at all, because Eddie leans forward, smelling like smoke and hot metal and something like cinnamon and wood that adds up to home, and presses a soft kiss into Buck's hair. It's that, the barely there touch of lips and the hot, relieved puff of breath, that finally makes Buck remember. That makes his eyes snap open, his head clear out of the drug-induced haze, and he tries to lift his arm again, something, anything, to keep Eddie where he is. And then Chim's tugging on the gurney, and Eddie's stepping back to give Buck space to stand up and step out of the ambulance. Hen reaches up to drape an arm half across Buck's shoulders and pushes his hands away so she can take over holding the gauze. She doesn't let him look back. It starts a couple of days after he introduces Eddie to Carla. They go out to a cat stuck in a tree, Eddie's first one, and Buck's so distracted watching him squint up into the sun that he misses a rung on the ladder, slips, and knocks his teeth together so hard he sees stars. Eddie offers his hand and leads Buck across the lawn and to the ambulance like he's a kid. Except Buck just lets him do it. He lets Eddie push him into a seat and poke gentle fingers at where a bruise is already blooming on the underside of his jaw, and finds himself flushing every time their eyes meet by accident. You'll live, Eddie says eventually, grinning, snapping the gloves off, and then he tugs Buck towards him and kisses the top of his head. It's softer than it should be, and lingers so long that heat licks its way up from under Buck's collar, makes him twitch where he's sitting. That night, Eddie invites Buck over for a beer, gently pries the bottle out of his white-knuckle grip, and presses him back into the counter. He kisses like no one Buck has ever had. Single-minded, and he doesn't have his mind set on what he can get, but what he can give. He kisses with a gentleness that takes Buck apart where he stands, that ruins him even as he's receiving it. They're the most bizarre, out-of-body 2 months of Buck's life, where, after each of Buck's many close calls, Eddie waits until the paramedics have checked him out, and then double-checks himself. Every time, he presses a soft kiss to the top of Buck's head, lets Buck burrow his face in Eddie's stomach and breathe for just a second, and then takes him home and takes him apart so thoroughly Buck can never hope to find all the pieces again. He lets Buck stay the night, asks Buck to stay the night. He introduces Buck to his abuela, invites him to tag along on zoo days and ice cream dates and grocery trips, lets Christopher call Buck their best friend with a look in his eye that could start wars. It's like nothing Buck has ever felt before. It's easy and happy. The kind of feeling that makes him want to take up space. He doesn't figure out it's love, until after Shannon's taken back her rightful place in Eddie's bed.
All done? Eddie asks, standing up when Buck's let back out into the waiting room. His arm is wrapped, the stitches pulling uncomfortably like they always do. It's been hours and hours in his own head, trying to hold on to what happened in the ambulance, determined not to let the phantom of a touch fade until he's sure he didn't dream it. It's been hours, and Eddie's still in his turnout pants, the jacket tossed over his seat, suspenders down by his sides. All done, Buck confirms, and finds that he can't exactly look Eddie in the eye, so he focuses on the sharp point of his eyebrow. And I'm off work for the rest of the week. Yay. Eddie smiles, but it doesn't reach anywhere on his face other than his mouth. He's aware, then. Someone has brought Eddie's truck over from the station, which is equal parts comforting and terrifying. The truck is familiar and it smells like Eddie, and Buck doesn't have to pretend to be fine for some stranger in an Uber. On the other hand, the truck is familiar and it smells like Eddie. He gets in, pulling the seatbelt over with his good arm. The cab rocks when Eddie sits down heavily in the driver's seat, and Buck doesn't look at him, doesn't ask where they're going, just keeps his eyes on the diffuse orange lights that paint their road home. In the distance, the horizon is already lightening. They stop at the station, where Eddie parks right next to Buck's Jeep while he goes to put his turnouts away, and Buck makes no move to get out. 10 minutes later, Eddie pulls up in front of his own house. Of course he does. Come on, he says, his voice thick, head bent forward so their eyes have no chance of meeting. Buck follows the hunched form of his back through a doorway more familiar than his own, takes his shoes off by the door, and gives himself a second to breathe. He might, if worst comes to worst, never get to have this again. Or he could, but that's a thought that's become so painful over the years that Buck has trained himself not to touch it. Eddie walks through to the kitchen. Buck closes his eyes, then opens them to see he's standing right opposite the picture of him and Christopher from Eddie's graduation ceremony. He follows. So, Eddie says, his arms crossed, leaning back against the counter in just about the spot where he changed Buck's life once. So, Buck repeats, and wishes he could pick out one of the emotions that are slip-sliding all over each other in their haste to get up his throat, choking him. You kissed me, he says, and he's shaking. On the head. Eddie pinches the bridge of his nose. I'm sorry. You're sorry. I don't know what you want me to say, Buck, he spits out, but the words are desperate. I forgot myself, I didn't mean to, and I'm sorry. Buck nods, blinking back against the tears that bloom in his eyes so fast they fall between one blink and the next. He watches his socks blur against the tile and spots one of Christopher's markers fallen behind a table leg, probably left there from a few days ago when he and Buck were working on an art project. I'm here, he thinks, and I've been here, and look at me. But that isn't, and never has been, enough. I know you don't, Eddie starts, and breaks off on a noise that has Buck's head snapping up to look at him. He's pressed the back of his hand to his mouth so hard his fingers are turned to claws. I know, he mumbles into his skin, and his voice is audibly constricted. You just scared me. I don't what? Buck asks, surprising himself, because he was going to tuck tail and go home and forget like he always does. Eddie shakes his head. Don't do that, he says, and drops his hand. Buck's legs tremble under him when he sees the sheen of tears in Eddie's eyes. Don't make me... Don't pretend. You know what it means when I kiss you like that. I didn't know what it meant when you kissed me up against that counter, Buck wants to say. He wants to name every place that's hurt to see for the past 3 years. Wants to remind Eddie of the way they used to be in bed together, quiet and all-consuming. The way their hands would curl together on Eddie's stomach in their sleep. Wants to ask why Anna isn't there anymore. Why Eddie doesn't tell him to get out when Buck's spending the 7th consecutive night on his couch. Buck wants and wants and wants. Isn't that the story of his life? I thought maybe he has to pause and swallow. And still none of the pressure on his throat eases. Maybe it was your way of saying what you couldn't say. Buck couldn't either at the time. He hadn't known what it was. Didn't think it was possible to have something so precious and get to keep it. And at least he was right about that one. Except, but then after the truck bombing, he says, breathing. I woke up in the hospital and I thought I felt, yeah, Eddie interrupts, biting his lip so violently Buck surprised not to see blood. Yeah, you thought right. And he pushes away from the counter, his head tilted to the side just so like something's dragging him forward, like he's not sure he's going of his own free will. He stops in front of Buck, raising his chin just a little to look him in the eye. The side of his jaw ticks, and he doesn't blink, doesn't so much as move, as his eyes go from the top of Buck's head, down over his forehead, his nose, his lips, his chin. They feel like a touch. Buck sways forward for just a second, drawn in. He only catches himself when Eddie inhales, sharp as a shot. He reaches up. It means I love you, he says, and runs his thumb over the scrape on Buck's cheek. It's always meant that. Eddie, Buck says. But it's only half a word. The rest lost to the emotion that surges up his throat. Eddie, why? I left you because I thought it was the right thing to do, he says, tripping over his words, his hands coming down to Buck's shoulders, uncurling on Buck's chest where his heart waits, suspended. My wife came back and wanted to be a family. And I thought Christopher needed that. I thought I wanted it. Buck sniffles. He'd feel so unbelievably pathetic if it wasn't Eddie's hands on him. Eddie's familiar warmth setting him at ease despite everything. You did want it, he says, because he remembers the conversation. It's one of those things he's never been able to push down and forget. You said, I know what I said, Eddie nods, his jaw working. And I thought it was the truth. And you, He trails off, runs an absent-minded, gentle knuckle up the hollow of Buck's neck, into the dip of his collarbones. Buck's mouth waters with the touch. You didn't try to stop me. It wasn't my place. Buck shakes his head, hard enough to dislodge Eddie's hand. I wouldn't have ever come between you. Eddie shrugs. You already had. Buck frowns. Every time she touched me. Eddie takes a shaky breath. I wanted you instead. I saw you every day at the station and in my house, and I wanted to go to you and say sorry and beg you to take me back if that's what it took and just fuck. He takes a step back, swiping at his face. Buck's chest tightens at the sight, at how rough Eddie's being with himself, and it's second nature to reach out and pull his wrists away, to replace Eddie's hands with his own and wipe away his tears. I just wanted to hold you again. I missed you, and you were right there. Buck pulls him in. He wraps his arms around Eddie's shoulders and drags him into an embrace, because there's nothing else he can do. Even if the thing between them is long gone, even if he breaks his own heart, he can't stand there when Eddie, I want you so much, Eddie whispers, with his forehead pressed between Buck's collarbones like he's bending over in prayer. So much, Buck. I can't stand it. I can't stand looking at you and knowing what I threw away. Buck's chest just breaks open, unleashes everything he's only just been keeping on a tether for so long. And then he can feel, can see the two of them in every corner of this kitchen, in every corner of the house, lost in each other before the tide came their way. I'm sorry, Eddie's saying, and he must feel the way Buck's heart is suddenly clawing to be released. He moves, goes to pull away, so Buck does the only thing he can think of. He tightens his hold, pulls Eddie in by the shoulders, and presses a kiss into his hair. Eddie stops breathing. You should have said, Buck says, and takes one hand off of Eddie to wipe his own face. Something new is waking up under his skin, fizzing where they touch. Eddie shakes his head, his forehead pressing into Buck's chest. His hands tighten in the back of Buck's shirt, and he breathes again, like he's just emerging from underwater. How? He asks, pulling away just a little, laying a ghost of a kiss into the hollow between Buck's collarbones. You were so hurt back then. You're not very good at hiding it. Buck laughs a little. He has no idea. You were everything to me, Eddie says. And I left, like you said everybody else did. I didn't deserve you. I don't. Buck feels unsteady on his feet because they're so close to something, and it's expanding between them like it takes another breath with every second they're standing in one another's arms. Eddie, he says, and lets it sound the way he's always meant it to, like his world begins and ends with it. You didn't leave. Look at us. Look at this. He holds an arm out to indicate the kitchen. Those are my knives, my apron. You don't even cook in here because I do it for you. The left corner of Eddie's mouth curls up. You get annoyed when I cook, he says, his eyes red, face shining with the residue of tears. He's the most beautiful thing Buck has ever seen. Because I move your things. You move my things because you think it's funny when I get mad, Buck returns. And he's shaking, shaking from head to toe, every last inch of his skin wildfire hot. Eddie runs a hand through Buck's hair, puts an open palm on his cheek. Buck closes his eyes, leans into it, and thinks that the feeling that shivers through him is exactly what he'd been trying to pin down in the ambulance. It's a little funny, Eddie says, and it sounds like a confession. But it's also, it's a reminder, I think, every time you reorganise the cutlery drawer. Buck shakes his head. A reminder of what? That you want to be here, Eddie says, and his other hand lands at Buck's waist, so familiar but from so long ago, that you're choosing to. Eddie, Buck breathes, bringing their foreheads together. Listen to me. I'm listening, Eddie murmurs. So close, Buck feels the words on his own lips. You ruined me for anybody else the moment you kissed me, he says. And it feels like something caged inside him is finally taking flight. Eddie's breath hitches, and Buck can feel that on his own lips too. We have a life together. We can actually live it together. I don't care about what happened or how it happened, and I've never held it against you because I'm so fucking in love with you, it just makes me cross-eyed. So if you could just... Eddie kisses him. He grabs Buck by the hips, turns him around, walks him backwards, pushes him against the counter, soft, holds his injured arm out of the way. Crowds in as gently as he did that very first time. Buck throws his weight backward, opens his legs so Eddie can press in between them, pulls him in by the collar of his soft-worn LAFD shirt. He's been living in the memory of this for so long, trembling on the precipice of something. And it's the same, but not the same at all. Eddie's teeth come down on Buck's bottom lip, just like before, gentle pressure without bite, and the scrape of his stubble makes the same heat simmer in the bottom of Buck's stomach. But the counter they're leaning against is littered with knife marks from years of Buck missing the chopping board, and Buck's fingers come away from Eddie's hair smelling like the hair gel they share most mornings. Eddie's watch, a Christmas present from Buck, is digging into Buck's side. When Christopher wakes up, he's going to request something out of Buck's breakfast repertoire, which he knows back to front. Eddie gasps into his mouth, touches the bare skin of Buck's stomach underneath his shirt, presses a thumb into the divot in Buck's chin to get his mouth open wider, every movement familiar. And Buck thinks that maybe, just maybe, they were always meant to take this road. So, Eddie says when he pulls away, an echo of the way they started this conversation light years ago. We have a life together, huh? He's grinning, softer than Buck has ever seen, and there's a new light behind his eyes. I mean, we took the scenic route, Buck grins back, running his fingers through the hair at the back of Eddie's head. But I don't know what else to call it. I've never washed my underwear at a best friend's house before this. Eddie presses a laugh and then a kiss into Buck's shoulder. Okay, he says, muffled by Buck's shirt. First of all, I'm not your best friend. Buck laughs, throwing his head back so far it thuds against the overhead cabinet. You'll always be my best friend. Eddie presses himself along Buck's front, chest to stomach to thigh. With benefits, he says, chasing Buck's smile, kissing into his mouth like he's done it 100 times. Because he has. And second of all, I've only been keeping the underwear separate because I figured I'd go insane knowing I'm wearing yours. I hope you're not expecting that going forward. Wouldn't dream of it, Buck says, his arms around Eddie's shoulders, contemplating wrapping his legs around Eddie's waist. It's our underwear now. Eddie grabs him by the thighs, boosts him up onto the counter, and kisses him so thoroughly they mess up the entire spice rack. Buck can't even bring himself to be annoyed about it. The end. Author notes. Come get your regularly scheduled spiralling over on Tumblr. Reader notes. Thanks to Hatterlove for giving permission to do podfic. If you've enjoyed this fic, please remember to go and leave comments and kudos on the original work. The recording for this fic messed up 4 times. So I think it's a testament to how much I love this fic that one, I kept going with it, and two, that line about Buck not realising it's love until Shannon's back, that hit every single time. Like, I've read it so many times now and I've recorded it a whole bunch, and every single time that line just hits and just guts me. Oh, I love it so much. Also, if you've enjoyed this and you love long fic, Hatterlove has got a fic called Tell Me About Despair, which if you've ever read a fic and thought, Eddie could do more therapy about this, that's the fic for you. So yeah, go check that out. Remember to leave comments and kudos, and thanks for listening.